On today's show, Pendle Town Council returns to address its most controversial topic yet. In Quebec, they prepare to tax the unvaxxed, and the world remembers the life-saving work of a rat. This is Pendle Talk Radio. And welcome to the show. Thank you for coming back, or if this is the first time, welcome. I hope we can entertain you for the next little bit. My name is Brian Constein. I am here with my co-host, Michael Rowland.
Hello, hello.
So as usual, we like to start off with some Penhold news, if there is indeed some. And I think we've found some. In fact, this might be one of the most controversial topics we've addressed yet. I'm not being too hyperbolic either.
No, I am pretty sure this is the one that split the council more than any other topic they've dealt with.
Yes. Last council, this topic split, they ended up on a split vote. And so the bill that they're addressing didn't pass. And it was a tighter vote than in order to allow cannabis shops in town.
So it's not cannabis that's the touchy
issue.
Nope,
it's not cannabis.
It's worse than that.
Yeah. In fact, the bylaw that has split council and perhaps brought up some conversations throughout town is the topic of urban chickens.
Ooh,
yes, dangerous chickens.
Yeah,
they're scheming. Yeah, go watch Wallace and Gromit if you haven't Chicken Run yet. So the last town council, they were trying to address this issue of urban chickens, and the topic of urban chickens, if you're not in that sphere, and really I'm not either, but this is controversy, so we like it, is the idea of having chickens, having residents in a town permitted to raise chickens. It is typically thought to be kind of an area where if you want chickens, you go to the country. But in recent years, this has really become a trend. And it's almost a trend that I think Penhold's actually getting further and further behind.
Yeah, a lot of big cities and other towns have been doing this for quite a while now. I know Red Deer's been doing it for years. And they've got a fair number of people in the city there that have urban chickens.
Yeah, we used to know a family that raised chickens. And yeah, you hardly know any difference walking by their house.
Yeah,
that they had chickens there.
Yeah, I think that's a bit of a misconception, is people think it's going to be loud, it's going to be smelly, it's just going to be a mess. But it's pretty common, and a lot more common than you think in the city, and most people don't even know it.
Yeah, if you have issues with dogs, messing with your lawn, you're not going to have that problem with no. with the neighborhood chickens. At least not typically. It's usually more contained than most animals that are allowed in municipalities or in towns and cities. All right. So the town council prior to this most recent vote started to address the bylaw and looking at the issues of urban chickens and whether or not to allow it. So they started way back in April of 2021, and eventually they got to the third reading in August of last year. And it ended up with a split vote. So apparently one of the counselors was not there. So there's only six voters and it split 3-3. And according to governing principles or the governing rules, if a bylaw reaches a split vote, that bylaw is considered defeated.
Yeah.
So a majority has to vote for a bylaw to enact it. And so that bylaw was defeated in a split vote. And I invite any counselor to correct me, but I'm thinking this is the only split vote that I know of that happened in this last council session.
Yeah, I think at most, I don't think there's been anything even all that close to it.
It's usually
one or two dissenting from the majority, but never close to a split.
Yeah, they usually work this stuff out prior to council meetings and they kind of hash through it in their workshops off council week. And so by the time they get to the council meeting, they usually know where things are going to line up. Now, it took a lot of work on the cannabis issue with myself and a number of other people to try to persuade town council to vote against allowing marijuana shops in town.
Yeah.
And we only got to a 4-3 vote in the end. And that was with lots of convincing. This one here only got to a 3-3 vote. And this is, again, we're talking about chickens in your backyard. And there's there's some really, I think, really strong opinions on Calto regarding this. It's actually, there's a lot of humor around this topic.
There's
with how serious people take it.
One particular counselor that it's kind of become an ongoing joke that you just bring it up around that counselor just to get the opinion out there.
Ruffle his feathers, as it were.
Exactly.
But so 3-3 vote didn't pass. And I just want to throw in another pet peeve here of mine is that this past town council changed the way they record votes. They no longer record individual votes, especially when there's a non-unanimous decision.
Yeah.
And so when you go to the bylaw or when you go to the minutes of a meeting, there's no record of who voted which way.
Yeah.
And it's simply, all you'll see is either it's carried unanimously or carried. That's it. Which I didn't understand when they first implemented it, and I still don't understand, especially when it comes to voting. Like, for a lot of people, I think this urban chicken thing is a significant issue. And you have to go digging, I think, a little bit and ask around to find out who voted which way, which might impact your vote.
Yeah.
In the ballot box. And so unfortunately, I didn't do the my due diligence, at least on that part of it, to find out who voted which way. You'll have to ask the counselors, but we'll see. There's a couple new faces now on council. We'll see how this one trends. But anyways, I just wanted to kind of run through the proposed bylaw, the new bylaw that is being presented now. So at this most recent council meeting, this bylaw was brought up for first reading. And it's worth going through because you might think that this is like either you allow chickens in the backyard or you don't. It's like, how much stuff do you need around this? Like, if you want a dog or a cat, you go get a dog or a cat, you get a license.
Yeah.
Everything's simple, it seems.
Yeah, I can understand some restrictions. They've got a few things in here. Like, there is a count how many you can have. You can have four chickens. I can understand that. You don't want to allow somebody to run a full-blown chicken farm in their backyard.
Yeah.
But how much more do you need?
That's right.
Apparently a bit more.
A little bit more. There's certain ones or certain expectations that you find in here about, you need a license for these urban hens. You're not allowed roosters in town. The one wonder is if the roosters aren't going to be more quiet than perhaps a lot of dogs are in town, but that's our issue. Let's see here. So they limit it to no more than four urban hens. So if you get a license for urban chickens, you're only allowed up to four. So we're not talking about someone building up the next maple leaf farms in their backyard. We're not talking about that.
This is just for your own personal use. A few chickens to lay some eggs.
That's right. The town in this bylaw would allow up to 25 licenses to be permitted. Let's see here. All right. So those are kind of some preliminary ones, some basic ones. There's other ones kind of about, upkeep regarding the coop and the well-being or some well-being issues, making sure the chickens have food and certain space requirements and health that they have room for, as it says, scratching, dust bathing, roosting. So all the things that you would normally do if you wanted chickens in the first place, they're there.
Yeah. We don't put any kind of those limits on the dogs or the cats.
You
buy a license and you get a dog or you get a cat.
Yeah. And if there is animal welfare laws, it's not on the bylaw level. It's just general provincial law, if anything else, about animal welfare. Like, that's what you would expect. So a lot of these, I think, just fall under that whole animal welfare kind of umbrella. But there are some peculiar ones. So like I said, getting a dog or a cat is a fairly simple process.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be the same with the hens, at least as the bylaw is laid out. So first of all, if you go to apply for a license, one of the 25 that will be allowed, of course you have to own the land and you have to live where the land is. And there's a couple other things, but here's some two requirements for license that are raise an eyebrow or two. It says, the applicant has taken a course on the safe handling of hens and eggs prior to the issuance of a license. I don't know what you know, but I haven't really looked up the courses on hens and egg handling.
No,
where one gets that. So
I know people that have chickens on a large scale that have never taken a course. You talk to somebody who has them and you learn what you need to learn and you do it.
Yeah, kind of like what you do with dogs or cats or hamsters or anything else.
You don't take a course.
No, you do a little research. You get a little background. Like, these aren't complicated animals.
There's a bit involved, but yeah, you don't take courses.
Apparently you do. In Pinhold, you have to take a course if you want a license. You have to take a course on the handling of hens and eggs. And remember, we're talking about your four backyard chickens.
Yeah.
Make sure that's always in the background of what we're talking about. We're not talking about commercial farming. We're talking about your four backyard hens.
Yeah.
All right. So you need a safe handling. Another requirement in order to get a license in Penhold for chickens says the applicant has registered with Alberta's Premises Identification Program. I had no idea what that was. So before the show, we did a little bit of research. What is that?
It's a provincial level thing that is clearly intended for farming. I'll just read a little excerpt here. If you own livestock, poultry, or other animals in captivity as defined in Alberta Premises Identification Regulation, and the animal is kept at a premises other than a commingling site such as a stable, you need to apply for a PID account and obtain at least one PID number associated to where the animals are located. I think that definitely gives the impression that the intent here is large-scale farm use. And it goes on. The whole purpose of this is to be able to track diseases among herds and things like that. So if you have chickens and there's some kind of a bird disease going around, they want to be able to identify the location of all these chickens.
Sure.
And that makes complete sense. The intent does not seem to be for your four backyard chickens in Penhold.
It would, at least that seems like a plausible reading of the spirit of the law. I'd be curious to know when that was kind of implemented. And I don't think it was implemented when the whole urban chicken thing was going on. I sense that was probably in place much earlier than the whole urban chicken fad.
Yeah, at least some aspect of it was 2009. But it's...
But like in the part that you just read, that's probably a longstanding animal health, public health kind of measure. That's like when issues are going through, the cattle industry, they want to track it back to the originating source. And that's going.
And you identify all the close herds of animals. Like if you have chickens and your chickens get diseased, they want to know that if your neighbor has chickens, they need to be able to identify whether it's spread there.
Sure.
But again, this doesn't seem to be for your four backyard chickens. This is if you are running a farm.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, just imagine. So it's your four backyard chickens, and in all of Penhold, there could only be a maximum of 100 chickens.
Yeah,
with 25 licenses, at most 100 chickens, and somehow you need the same kind of premises identification program number that all those dairy farms across the highway have, in order to have your chickens, four chickens in the backyard.
Now this
seems
wouldn't necessarily be like we're ranting on this. I don't know that this is the town of Penhold's fault. It's that premises identification program doesn't seem to have anything, as far as I've seen so far, that specifies a number.
No.
So they don't specify scale. So technically, if you're keeping livestock or these types of animals, you have to identify with it. So I would guess then that Penhold doesn't really have a choice in that matter. You probably have to regardless. So it's maybe we're complaining about the provincial requirement.
I'll let you be a little more kind on the council on this. I think there's a plausible case that this could, this, if assuming that this is meant for a larger commercial kind of in setting, which I think is quite a reasonable assumption, that the spirit of that law should not be applied to the backyard chickens. Yeah. And the town could easily, I think, reasonably read the law that way and not be in like contravention of it.
Right.
I think there's perhaps a technical yes, that's technically what the law says, but there's also, as I think everyone who knows when they're pulled over for speeding, there's a spirit of the law as well. Like the officer has some leeway in whether or not he applies that law to your specific situation or not.
Yeah.
Same here. I sense that the council could reasonably make a case that doesn't have to be required. But again, my cynical side is that I don't think there's a lot of motivation to make this as simple as possible either.
No, it's certainly not as simple as if you want chickens, you apply to have chickens. There's a lot of hoops you got to jump through.
Yeah. Yeah. And then just finally, again, one other kind of peculiar one. Again, I think this applies more to kind of a larger scale issue, is that under the categories of responsibilities of owners keeping urban hens, one of the responsibilities says that, quote, they have to follow biosecurity procedures outlined by the Canadian Food Inspection Agency to reduce potential for disease outbreak. And remember, and also in this bylaw, you have to follow some sort of biosecurity procedures. Again, that seems to be more commercial based kind of things, but keep in mind as well, this bylaw says just a couple of lines later that no person who keeps urban hens shall sell eggs, manure, meat, and other products derived from the urban hen. So you're not even supposed to be selling this anyways as like food on the public market.
Yeah.
This is for you and your family. And yet for some reason, biosecurity procedures have to be in place. This just seems a lot of government bureaucracy run amok here.
Yeah.
We are talking about four backyard chickens. People aren't going to jump into this like they are for like looking after dogs. I think people understand, at least I'm going to assume people understand, that raising chickens is perhaps a little bit more involved than your cat, but not really a lot. Mm-hmm. And if you do get into it, that you're going to do some research on your own, and you don't need all this bureaucratic oversight for, again, your four backyard hens. I really hope council can clean some of this up, simplify this. So this is a legitimate option for people to have. This is, again, I think a little bit of government overreach, at least overreach in the sense of over restrictions. I think there's some room for government limitations on a lot of these things, but they are just fine tuning this way too much to make it even useful for purpose, for allowing urban chickens. But yeah, like I said, more rant based, but I think there's something that resonates at a deeper level, that governments should be looking to make things as easy as possible for the average citizen to go about certain things like this every day. Things that really don't have a lot of issues that might affect other people. This is you and your backyard for the most part, no more than really you having a dog running around the backyard.
Yeah.
Try to make it more like having a dog or a chicken or a dog or a cat. I think that should be kind of the angle that council should be taking as much as possible. I understand provincial issues get involved here, but try to push back at least a little bit on that for us. That'd be great. That'd be great.
Yeah, definitely don't make it easy.
All right. Moving out from the local scene to the national one. If you've been following any kind of national news, no doubt you've come across this story already. Over in Quebec, they released plans, or at least their intentions. They didn't release a lot of details, but at least their intentions to tax the unvaxxed, particularly the adults who refuse to get the COVID COVID-19 vaccination. And this story, though, however, started a few days before Quebec's announcement. On January 7th, the federal health minister reported as saying that, I personally think that we will get there at some point. He's referring to mandatory vaccinations. Continuing the article, it says, I see it coming personally, not now. I don't think we are there yet, but I think discussions need to be had about mandatory vaccinations because we have to get rid of COVID-19. And this has prompted numerous articles over this last week, and numerous replies from him, provincial heads of provinces and health ministers and provincial doctors in Alberta. As soon as the health minister came out with that statement, Kenny quickly jumped out and reminded the province that Alberta legislated away the power of mandatory vaccinations, and that they had no plans to revisit that issue. Numerous other provinces have basically come out and kind of said the same thing.
Yeah,
that they are not interested in taxing those that have not received the vaccination. And so it was only 4 days later, though, that Quebec came out with their announcement that they were going to bring in significant, it was their word, significant health contributions from the unvaccinated.
It's all about the language. They use ways of skirting around the issue and not actually saying what they mean.
Yeah, it is a very annoying habit of politicians.
Yeah.
It's to treat both the province or the citizens as children when you do that. I think it treats the populations like, we just can't handle the truth. We have to put it in this nice language for you, because otherwise you wouldn't really understand it. But I think it also reveals, a lack of conviction. If you can't say what you mean directly, do you really stand by what you think you believe? Like, call it what it is. This is a health tax. This is basically a punishment, a negative incentment to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
It's what it is. You're taking money from someone in order to incentivize them to go through a medical procedure. That's what is going on. It just doesn't sound quite as nice when you say it that way, I guess. Maybe that's why. When you put it in kind of more plain language, I think you start getting down to the crux of the matter, that it starts to reveal maybe a little bit of the absurdity of some of these things, because in what other scenario are you going to force someone into a medical procedure? Now, I guess the immediate response is, well, we already require vaccinations for kids. Like Ontario actually requires certain vaccinations,
right?
Your childhood vaccinations to get into the school system. My response is, well, why pile on a bad thing onto a bad thing already? Yeah. Why don't you just get rid of all mandatory vaccinations and let parents actually be the parents of the kids? We've talked about this before. This is a seatbelt law. People are going to do what's in their best interest. And in most cases, getting vaccinations is in their best interest, regardless of whether they're mandatory by the government or not. Government, get out of the way. Let parents do the parenting. But going back to Quebec here, now we'll get to in a second this kind of idea of mandatory vaccines versus, say, vaccination incentives. It's a fine line. It's getting finer every day. So technically, this isn't a mandatory vaccination. And we're seeing some of these non-vaccination mandates in some European countries already. So in Italy, I think if you're over 50, you have to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
In Greece as well, they have mandatory vaccinations. Again, I'm using that term. It's really, if you don't get vaccinated, you get fined. I think in Greece, it's about $150 Canadian. I don't know if that's a recurring basis. Austria, this is actually on the books. Is it on the books now? Actually, I might be overspeaking. If it's not, it's well on its way. Austria is requiring vaccination or fines of $5,000 every 3 months. $20,000 a year if you don't get vaccinated.
It's hard to say that that's not a mandatory vaccination.
Yeah,
because like, how do you live at that point? Like, you have to have a pretty serious income to be able to just toss out $20,000 a year to that fine.
Actually, yeah, that kind of prompts me, or reminds me a lot of some of the arguments or pushback against Quebec is that this is going to impact the lower income more than the upper income.
Disproportionately affects the poor.
Yeah. Cause the rich are like, okay, whatever, I can afford, you know, $20,000 a year. That's chump change. But yeah, for the average middle class, like $20,000, that's a devastating hit. Like,
yeah.
That's your mortgage down the drain for a whole year.
Yeah.
If not more. In Singapore, they do have not mandatory vaccinations again, but if you're unvaccinated, you have to pay your own medical bills.
I've heard that argument quite a few times. And actually, I think Kenny did make a statement kind of on that idea where he argued, kind of brought back the same thing that I say all the time, that if you do something like that, then you have to do that for every choice somebody makes in their life that affects their medical health. Somebody who smokes, if they have to go in for lung cancer treatment, too bad, you have to pay your medical bills because you made that choice.
Yep.
Or somebody who has an eating problem and eats too much and is morbidly obese, you have to cover your own medical bills because you made a choice. That creates a slippery slope you don't want to fall down.
Oh yeah, for sure. The argument's floating around now that this tax is basically punishing people for a certain choice they've made about their health. When we make those decisions all the time that have medical consequences.
Yep.
And the healthcare system has been kind of built to accommodate those issues, you know, whether it's, you know, heart related conditions, you know, for obesity or smoking, drinking, you know, if you get drunk and crash your vehicle, guess what? You still don't have to pay for your medical treatment.
You have other things to deal with for the legality of it, but your medical care is covered.
Yeah, you're not gonna get charged extra for being stupid and getting drunk and crashing. That's still gonna be covered by everyone else.
Yeah.
This apparently though is special.
Yeah.
But it's special only in the sense that we don't have a healthcare system that is ready to accommodate that. And my thought is, how about we tax the politicians who didn't accommodate for, or who didn't build up a healthcare system to accommodate for this influx?
Yeah.
You know, that's especially when you're talking about socialized medicine, like we have in Canada, this universal medicine, you can't say this is an issue of those mean capitalists running the healthcare system, like in the States. This is the healthcare system is completely run by the government.
Yeah.
And if the government, if the healthcare system is not prepared, that's a problem with the politicians and the government and how they've prepared for these kind of contingencies, and apparently not very well.
Yeah, I've actually heard that apparently we are at, which wouldn't surprise me in the least, we're at the lowest hospital bed per capita rate we've been basically in recorded history of our province.
Yeah,
country and so on.
Yeah, we're pretty low. I can't remember the stats, but we're low, especially when we compare it to, say, other universal healthcare systems.
Right.
Britain, Switzerland, those are the ones that can usually come off the mind. I'm sure there's others in Europe. But when you see a list of those and you look at the kind of healthcare capacity, Canada is actually pretty low on that list. And there's quite a few people on that list. And so, there's something to be said for the politicians not having prepared the system for this kind of shock. And yet that doesn't seem to be an issue for it has to be the population. That's the issue here. There's just so many different things to kind of look at here. And just to throw some thoughts out here. So Alberta quickly, and Kenny quickly came out, like you said, and pointed out the fact that Alberta is not going to go down this road of taxing the unvaccinated. But obviously we have gone down the road of restrictions. And even though Kenny has not used the word, we do have vaccine passports in place.
Yeah, you can't go to a movie. You can't go sit in a restaurant. There's a number of things you can't do without your vaccine passport.
Yeah,
that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, like you can't go to the multiplex here in Penhold. Like you can't go watch a game. Or if you're coming here for, you know, one of the hockey camps or something like that. Those are all restricted programs now. So my question though is, and this is across the board, every province has put in some sort of restriction with the intention of incentivizing the unvaccinated to become vaccinated.
Especially
now with Omicron and how much that is transmissible. At least before that, you can make the argument that there was some notion that, you know, we could separate the unvaccinated and so they wouldn't get it and then it wouldn't spread. That's no longer the case now. It's being transmitted to everyone.
Yep.
The vaccines have really waned on limiting transmission. And so now with these restrictions though, across the board, my question is, why are so many provinces so quick to say, no, we're not going to tax you for being unvaccinated, but we will restrict what you can do in a large number of societal situations? In fact, it was only over Christmas that the government had mercy on the unvaccinated and on the rest of us and allowed us to go meet with someone other than our immediate household.
Yeah.
Like that was like a mercy of the government onto us. And it's only, but even until then, the unvaccinated basically were restricted to their house. Like they and no one else could come visit them.
Yeah,
if you're following the rules, that is.
Pretty near the only thing you could do was the kind of the essentials type shopping.
Yeah.
You could go in, you can go to your grocery store and so on, but you can't go sit in a restaurant. You can't go to any kind of social activity type place. Like, so your bowling alleys, your theater, your any kind of activity you would take part in.
Yeah. You know, all that.
That's human, all restricted.
You know, all that human relationship making life worth living kind of aspect of things.
You don't get to
do
that.
You can't do that. My question is though, what's the difference? What is the difference between the restrictions we see in Alberta and across the provinces and Quebec's taxes? I don't see a categorical one.
The only thing is it's kind of almost like a negative positive situation where one you're telling somebody you can't do something. The other one you are telling them they have to do something, pull the money out of their pocket and hand it to you. It does make a bit of a difference. And I'm not saying I agree with either one. I am absolutely not in support of the extreme restrictions, but I don't find that nearly as intrusive as reaching into my wallet and pulling my money out because I choose not to get unvaccinated. Like that would be the scenario as opposed to saying, well, okay, you can't do this thing. It's far less intrusive.
It's definitely more proactive. Like it steps into your life. And forces you to do something that you don't want to do.
Yeah.
So it forces you to pay a tax. And quite honestly, I think one of the first questions I had was, well, okay, what happens if I don't want to pay this health tax? One thought is that they'll just take it out of your income tax or they'll take it out of your tax returns.
That's what Quebec is talking about as a possibility. Like they said that they're not planning on putting this into like a fee you pay when you go to get healthcare or anything. They're talking about putting it in as some form of tax come tax time on your income tax. And so in that case, there's no way to avoid it unless you aren't paying any taxes. So anybody with any form of income, they're going to take that chunk out of it.
Yeah. So there's certainly the Quebecs are certainly more, if you will, proactive, but I still see them as kind of both negatives. They're both taking away something from me. One's taking away my money and one's taking away my social life, as it were. Now, you know, how do you compare those two? Well, you know, for some, the social thing might be more important than the money actually is.
That's true.
But in the end, I still see them in the same category. They're both they're both kind of this negative based incentive to try to get you to do something that you may not want to do.
Yeah. And that's fair. Like, I'll say for myself, I'm not the one that does a lot of going out and a lot of the stuff that the restrictions would restrict a person from doing. So yeah. I don't find that nearly as intrusive, but for others, that's just as bad as you pulling money out of their wallet. That's affecting their life dramatically.
Yeah. So that's what I mean. Why it would make perfect sense to me, or at least it'd be perfectly consistent if Kenny came out tomorrow and said, yeah, we're going to tax you. I don't think that's any different than the restrictions that have already been put in place. They are, it's functioning in the same way.
Yeah.
It's a negative incentment to try to get you to do something. And in this case, get the COVID vaccine. And so that's me. I don't know what the difference is. I don't think there is a principal categorical difference between the two. And so that kind of makes me a little leery, especially when, you know, especially Kenny, has backtracked on a lot of these other issues. This one I must say is probably further out there than the others. I don't know how he's making a principal difference between the two, but I think a lot of people do that.
Yeah.
There's something radically different. And perhaps it's just the fact that the government is actually proactive in taking something from you as opposed to preventing you from doing something.
Yeah.
But I don't think that in and of itself is fundamentally different. I don't think that takes the two things out of the same category. They're both native based incentives to get you to do something.
But the public image of a tax, even if they find ways around calling it a tax, people immediately recognize it for what it is. And the public image of that,
yeah,
it hurts.
Yes.
So if Kenny were to go ahead with that, he knows that that would have a really bad image among a portion of his potential voter base. And it hurts his standing in the province.
Now with, so that's one distinction. What's the difference between Alberta's restrictions, all these other provincial restrictions, and Quebec taxes? I said, I don't think there is a big categorical difference. It's just the, I almost wonder if it's not viewed as, you know, as proof of your commitment to ending COVID. That's really the only difference here. Quebec was still under curfew for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. You couldn't go out walking your dog after 10 PM.
Yeah. So this is still, so apparently they just announced that they're removing the curfew, like the day or two after announcing the health taxes. So how seriously are they really about ending COVID or not?
Yeah.
I thought these curfews were really important. And also, just a note of irony here, I don't want to forget that Quebec is also the same province that makes vaccines necessary in order to protect the healthcare system. You have to be, you know, this is the kind of their end goal. They want you to get vaccinated to help protect the healthcare system. But they also put in mandatory vaccines if you want to get your alcohol or your marijuana.
Yeah.
So you decide how that makes sense.
For the sake of the healthcare system,
yeah,
you can only feed your vice if you get the vaccine.
Yeah. And so that's one kind of angle. The other one is, you know, what fundamentally is the difference between mandatory vaccines and vaccine passport? You know, where does the threshold lie? And here the threshold seems to be whether or not the person has a choice. Now, with mandatory vaccines, that choice is taken away. Like, we are talking about, in some way, getting the jab in your arm. And that might be by force, ultimately, or, you know, through prison. But even that, you know, if prison is an option, how real mandatory is it?
Yeah.
Because if that's what you mean by mandatory vaccines, either you get the jab or you go to jail, well, then you're just back to vaccine passports. Because all you're saying is if you don't get the vaccines, you can't participate in any part of life or a social life. We're going to put you in jail.
Yep.
And that's already just further down the path we're already on. So if that's the distinction between mandatory vaccines and vaccine passports, then we're heading that same direction already. We already have mandatory vaccines.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing, they can go a few steps farther before you'd have, everybody would have a difficult time not calling it a mandatory vaccine. Like, basically that point where you start restricting access to grocery shopping there, then you've just hit the point of there's no argument left.
Which for a brief time, but New Brunswick actually flirted with.
I saw that.
Before they've changed back on that. But yeah. Yeah. So don't pretend this, I think this is really any different than mandatory vaccines by name would be.
Yeah.
We're just making the choice more and more difficult, bringing up more and more consequences if you choose to go against it.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, at what point does the choice become really a false choice? Like, you have the facade of picking door A or door B, but if you don't pick door A, oh boy.
Yeah.
Like, you are not going to like the consequences. And at that point, that's mandatory. Like, for all practical purposes, that's mandatory vaccination.
Yeah.
And that's the direction things are going. Under Quebec is leading the way. The prime minister and his healthcare minister seem to be on board with that, or at least on board with that direction of things going. And so it's something that we need to be aware of. And just a final point on this, I think you need to be aware of it. Even if you are for mandatory vaccinations, the nature of politicians, when you look at the people who run for kind of political office, they tend to have a couple common characteristics. First, they desire control in some way. They desire to lead. They desire the power that comes with being in leadership. They sense they like to be in front, and so. In that similar way, or in the second point, so one characteristic of politicians is they desire control. That's why they run. They want to be in leadership positions. They want that power. The second part of that, though, is that there's a sense of superiority or rightness about them. Someone who wants to lead a group of people doesn't do it thinking, you know, I don't know if I'm leading you in the right direction, but let's try this.
Yeah.
Like, someone who's in leadership thinks, or at least, you know, I'm sure there's exceptions to this, but generally someone in leadership thinks they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I know, as soon as I say this, everyone has in their mind the counterexample of a leader who doesn't know what they're doing. I get it. But the point is that leader themselves think they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And so, I think, like I say, this is kind of a general rule. I think it applies to most politicians. They desire the control and they think they know what they're doing. And that can be a dangerous combo. It doesn't have to be. You know, I think those are good qualities to have as a leader. It provides a confident leader, if nothing else.
Yeah.
But if there isn't a certain amount of control or some sort of leash or rein that applies to that, some sort of limitations to that, you end up, those characteristics can lead you right off a cliff with the best of intentions.
Yeah.
Like, so there isn't one state leader, one provincial leader, prime minister who doesn't believe that they are making the choices for the good, for the best reasons. They think that what they are doing is benevolent. They are doing it for the good of the people.
Yeah.
None of them, like, that's what they think. No, very few people do evil because it's evil. They do what they do because they think it's good. And so when it comes to these mandatory vaccines, these restrictions, it flows naturally from the politician's natural disposition of control and a sense of superiority or rightness. In every situation.
Yeah. They're trying to fix the problem using the control and the power they have.
Yeah. And the issue, and they said, so I bring this up, is that even if you are for mandatory vaccines, we have to be very careful about how much leash we give politicians. We have to remember that, especially in the democracy in which we have, we have to make sure our voice is heard in some way. that the politicians know we haven't let go of the reins, as it were, because they will lead us as far as their desire takes them, because that is what a politician wants to do.
Yeah,
they want the poll. They want to keep leading. They think they are right in almost every situation. It takes a lot for politicians to admit they've gone down the wrong way.
Yeah,
like just try to imagine the last press conference where a politician says, "Sorry, I made a mistake here." and especially if they don't get caught caught in that mistake. Like, there's no politician who goes out there and says, "You know what? After some self-reflection, I made a mistake here. I need to reverse this policy."
They're not going to willingly backtrack. No,
that's not in the politician's character. They're always pushing forward. There's always that goodness that drives them forward. They are doing what is good. And so we as citizens, I think, have to be really careful about how much leash we allow politicians to have. And we've brought it up before, there's a lot of people in this country that are pretty loose on the reins when it comes to these restrictions.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of these restrictions will come back, will be kind of lifted. That'll happen. But what you've done is you've told the government how far they can run. You've told them what kind of power they now have.
Yeah. It's like setting a precedent for what you will allow government to do.
Yeah.
Ignore COVID for the moment and just think about the precedent you're setting for the power and control they have.
Yeah. And so if they see themselves as the ultimate authority, and a lot of them do, like, just look at how they run over businesses, individual rights at this point, or places of worship. Like, they've come at this with the attitude that out of the goodness that we must do, your authority, any authority that you might have as an individual or as a business owner or you know, a religious person, all that authority we have to take back, because it was initially ours to begin with, really, because we are ultimate authority. You can only run your business if we give you permission to anyways. If that is the mentality, if that's the mentality of the politician, and I think a lot of them do view themselves as the highest authority of the land, we as the citizens have to be very careful and make sure that we are being heard through the ballot box, through protests if necessary, through interactions with our politicians, whatever it might be. We need to make sure that we are making sure people or the politicians know that we are still watching them, and they can't go as far as they might want to go.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm being a little long-winded, I think, on this, but I think it's really important to keep in mind, whichever side of the vaccination mandates, restrictions you fall. Remember, there's very few governments that give back the power that you give them.
Yeah.
So be careful. This is a very dangerous time when it comes to politicians and power. All right. Enough of that. Let's finish up with one more story here. And the world has indeed lost a rat. it's just a rat. But it's a unique rat, if nothing else. Yeah, hopefully we can talk about rats in Alberta. They are usually welcome here. Now, I came across this story, and it's starting to get some buzz. There's a story about Magawa. This is a very famous mine-clearing rat. And apparently he was even awarded a gold medal for his heroism. I'm going to set aside calling animals heroes. That's another topic for another rant. I'm not going to go there. But anyways, he died at the age of 8. He was pleasantly in retirement from his land clearing duties after 5 years of service, and he passed away at the age of 8. Magawa is a rat, and specifically an African giant pouch rat. And these guys can grow up to 2.5 pounds, and about 28 inches long.
Oh, so, that's horrible.
So I saw a picture of someone holding this rat, and it looks like maybe an oversized guinea pig, I'm guessing, something like that. I was trying to find another animal for reference. Maybe a cat, maybe like a rabbit.
Chinchilla. Looks a little bit like a chinchilla.
Well, those are pretty small, aren't they? This is one where you would probably have to cradle it.
Yeah.
Anyways. yeah. So there's this Belgium charity, Apopo, and for the last 20 odd years now, they've been training rats, and specifically these African giant pouched rats, to sniff out landmines. And it's just a kind of a interesting use of an animal. Like, you don't think about, scent smelling or scent animals used for their scent, you know, think dogs.
Yeah. Pretty much exclusively.
Yeah. You don't think about rats. And so this is actually a specially bred rat out of Tanzania. And they spend about 9 months training a rat to detect certain scents, particularly related to bombs. And then after those 9 months, they send that rat out to the field, wherever they're going to be sniffing out the landmines. And in Magawa's case, this rat was sent out to Cambodia. And so one of these landmine sniffing rats gets out to the field. They go through another kind of acclimation process.
Yep.
And get further accredited to sniff mines in that area.
Got more training than most people.
Yeah, exactly. The difference here, it only costs about 6,000 euros to train one of these land sniffing rats. I think that's cheaper. and so Magal was sent out there. And what they actually do, it's kind of interesting. They send they clear a certain part of the field of a landmine field first by humans. And what the humans do is they kind of clear certain squares out in kind of a checkerboard. So they kind of run track lines, like you might imagine, you know, in a wheat field, the track lines, but these track lines intersect to create kind of a checkerboard kind of look. And so you got these clear pathways, and then you got big open squares that still need to be cleared. And so that allows two trainers or two handlers to go on opposite sides of the squares and kind of guide the rat around these squares, checking for mines. The fun thing about rats is apparently they don't form the kind of the bond that dogs do. So there are bum sniffing dogs out there, but they're usually very attached to their trainers. And that's like, they go through one trainer and they stick with that.
Yeah. It becomes like a lifetime bond.
Yeah. Yeah. They could not work with someone else. Rats, they don't care. They're just trained for food. So if they find something, they get rewarded for that. And that's their whole world far as it goes. They don't care who's holding the leash. but they go out and clear mines this way in this kind of big checkerboard. What's notable about Magawa is this rat apparently cleared in his 5-year career, cleared about 100 mines in Cambodia. He cleared a section of land equivalent to 20 football fields. And so it's a significant amount of land.
Yeah.
And so remember, that's land that has to be pre-cleared in that checkerboard, and then the rat can do his business there. But apparently Magawa was one particularly gifted rat at this. He was again awarded this gold medal from an organization for animals and their work. And so he was retired in the last couple of years. The article says he was slowing down. So the rat retired, it says, last June after slowing down as he reached old age, and eventually passed away at an age that was suitable for an animal of for a giant African poached or sorry an African giant poached rat. So yeah, there is your random story of the episode, that there is that the world is being made safer by landmine sniffing rats. So that is the story to close out this episode. I hope it has been entertaining. Thank you for joining us. As always, we'll post our articles on the website, pinholetalkradio.ca. If you want to check it out, if you want to read further about Magawa, the landmine sniffing rat, or any of these other articles that we've talked about, their stories. My name is Brian Constantine.
And I'm Michael Rowland.
And this has been Pinhole Talk Radio.